This is News in No Time, Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, among our topics, does it matter that there's no evidence Iran is developing a nuclear weapons program? And what are we doing to help rising gas prices go down? We'll talk about that from our New York Bureau, Marcelo Suarez Orozco, co-director of the Immigration Studies Department at New York University. Joining us from MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Glenn Lowry from Boston University. He's a professor there of economics. And Yvonne Bino joins us. She's an author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and the Hip-Hop Culture. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Let's stay true to what we were talking about in segment A. We should note that the White House is proposing stricter fuel economy standards. The automobile industry does not necessarily like to hear that because it costs them money. There is a minimum standard that automobile makers must meet. And that is what we are used to by seeing what you get miles per gallon. When we hear this, Glenn Lowry, and we know that Americans love their big cars and only talk about trading them in and getting rid of these SUVs and tanks, when we see gas prices like this and then we revert right back when it drops, where do we sit? We're at a quagmire, quite frankly, a crossroads.
We got a serious problem. The word addiction was used, and I think it's apt. We have a pattern of behavior here with respect to gasoline usage in particular and energy usage more generally that cannot be sustained. Young American men and women are going to die for oil if they're not already doing so unless we do something about this. I mean, look at the political situation in Nigeria, in Venezuela, in Saudi Arabia. Those are important sources of supply for us that are not exactly guaranteed. And as was said, China and India are coming online. We could be at war in order to secure oil supplies unless we change our habits. So this is a very serious problem, and I think this fuel economy stuff barely scratches the surface of it.
Marcelo, how realistic is it to assume that Americans are going to change their habits? We're talking about all of this in 90-degree weather across the country. We're not even into winter yet when those housing fuel costs kick in.
Very difficult, Ed, to change habits in terms of the short-term adaptation to this dynamic. In the long term, we are running on empty. The prices are out of control. The fields are running out of oil in the long term, and the environment can't keep up with the current rate of emissions. And this does not take into consideration what the entry of China and India into the global capital economy means. This is a historic churn without precedent in the entry of over a billion workers into the global market economy from China, from India, suggests that the energy implications of this are really quite astonishing. And we don't have a long-term strategy. We're dealing with very short-term issues of supply and demand. In the long term, we have a big problem ahead of us.
And Yvonne, all of this speaks to the idea if we see the world stay at status quo, there is question of destabilization continuing in the Middle East. There's question of, as we already talked about, Venezuela perhaps cutting off oil supplies to the United States. And at the drop of the hat, whether or not relations can be secured with African nations who may have oil and be willing to funnel some this way, you really are standing on tenuous ground.
That's certainly true, Ed. We are standing on tenuous ground, but as has been said by earlier guests, we've seen this before. In the 70s, we had a major energy crisis. We heard some of the same talk at that point that we need to explore alternative fuel sources. We need to do more research and development. As soon as the panic died down, we went back to the same habits. And I think, unfortunately, if this subsides even slightly, we will hear less and less of the urgency. Overall, Americans don't like pain, and our politicians who pander to people who don't like pain are not willing to get strong about setting an overall policy to really get serious and aggressive about researching and developing viable alternative fuel sources. And we're not willing to get tougher with the automobile industry also to make them adhere to more stringent standards. We keep always throwing out, well, the prices of cars will go up. Certainly, everything will go up in the short run, but we have to have a long-term view. And unfortunately, I have not seen in my lifetime us Americans having a long-term view towards energy and fuel.
All right. Let's move our attention.
I just wanted to add briefly, this is Glenn Lowry, that, you know, gasoline is cheap in the United States right now compared to many other countries in the world. And I don't mean to gainsay the pain that people are experiencing with these rising prices at the pump, but gasoline is $2 a liter in Europe, not $2 a gallon. And, you know, that's the way it should be. Again, please forgive me, but the high prices are necessary in order to force us to make the changes that we need to make. So, pain notwithstanding, a lot of whining about high prices now really is taking our eye off the ball.
Yeah, but as we heard from Reggie in the piece that Faraj Adea did at the front of the show, he said brother's having a hard time filling the tank, and he and many others don't really care what it costs to fill up in London or Glasgow or anywhere else. Their concern is what it costs me at the Amoco down the street.
Right.
All right, that being said, let's move our attention to something that is raising concerns once again about how the Bush administration and, quite frankly, other administrations have been doing policing around the world. It is being said, though official word has not been announced yet, that Iran, not Iraq now, we're talking about Iran, their nuclear arms program may have been misjudged. Traces of bomb-grade uranium found 2 years ago in Iran came from, it is said, contaminated Pakistani equipment and is not evidence of a clandestine nuclear war program. This is from a group of scientists who did a study over the last 9 months of collected data to inspect for the International Atomic Energy Agency. When we hear this, Yvonne, once again, and we should note that the Bush administration had long contended that this find of uranium was proof that Iran was building a nuclear arms program. When we hear this yet again and we know what fiasco was caused with Iraq, what is to be said?
I think it's to be said that Americans who are paying attention are losing less and less confidence in this administration. Again, we're hearing more wrong assumptions. Just like we heard there was WMD in Iraq and there were substantive links between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. Because you say it over and over and over doesn't mean that it's so. In terms of Iran, we still frankly don't really know what they're doing over there. We don't have any conclusive evidence as to whether or not they are indeed attempting some type of nuclear buildup. What we do know at this point, what our current assumptions are not correct. I think that the larger issue is, are we as a country able to go around the world and tell whatever other nation what they can and cannot do? And I think that's going to be more and more of the key issue as we move forward. Other countries are autonomous. They have their own leadership, be that democratic or whatever form that they find acceptable. And I think there's going to be less and less agreement that we have the right to go and stand over people and tell them what they can and cannot do, especially when we don't necessarily adhere to those same standards.
Mm-hmm. Marcelo?
Matt?
International mechanisms and increasing transparency will be required moving forward in managing this unfolding crisis in Iran, which of course has a complicated relationship to the recent developments in Iraq, as well as the forthcoming developments in Iraq as the new government constitutes itself there. This really shows how the legitimacy and the authority of our policy in Iraq has suffered by lack of transparency, and why we really need to resuscitate international mechanisms to monitor, to act multilaterally to address these, as Yvonne says, issues that we will be facing not only in Iran, but elsewhere moving forward.
I'd just like to add that I agree with what Marcelo just said. And this incident underscores two things in my mind. One, the great difficulty in telling what is the objective truth about these situations. with a lack of human intelligence and with the ambiguity of physical evidence and so forth. It's just hard to know what's going on. And that underscores the second point, which is trust is a valuable commodity in the international community. And we can see now the damage that was done to America's national interest by the Bush administration's dishonesty and lack of transparency in the way in which it built its case on false claims for the war in Iraq. That has actually made us less safe.
But I think Yvonne brings up an interesting point. It's a point that I've been trying to, as I've moderated different programs throughout the years, get people to deal with, and that is the idea that as the world becomes more interconnected and to a great degree, countries become less reliant on the United States for certain things. There is this sense of standing up against Big Brother and saying, you're not going to tell me that I can't have something that you have. And that if we feel the need to protect ourselves with nuclear weapons or anything else, we're going to do it. Is this truly the changing face of the world? And will the United States have to, in fact, accept that the world is changing and that we're no longer the same bully? We're certainly still the bully on the block, but the same bully we used to be. The fear is less.
Well, I think the answer to that, I was just going to say quickly that, in my view, the answer to that question is yes. We are going to have to accept some limitations on our prerogatives in deference to the international opinion and work in a multilateral fashion if we're going to go forward. We're not going to be able to do it on our own.
I think that's certainly the case, that as we move forward, we're going to have to acknowledge also that there are going to be some nations that are not going to respond to any multinational effort, regardless of what kind of shoring up we do with the UN. There will still be nations that will not respond to other sanctions or proposals that are put forward. And we have to move beyond that. They will not respond to diplomatic overtures as well. And I think that the United States is going to have to realize that. I don't even like the term bully. I just think that they have to understand that they cannot police other nations in the same way that they may have been able to do in the past. Moreover, having international and rather foreign policies that are not transparent, that seem hypocritical, that does not foster any trust in us to have other countries want to get on board to be our allies, or would even be willing to concede that perhaps their position needs rethinking.
Marcelo, how realistic is it for us to assume that those in Washington, who quite frankly turn the corner very slowly, will look at it that way? When you listen to military brass, and quite frankly, when you listen to politicians who've been entrenched in this kind of global picture for years, the idea of being the biggest kid on the block, quite frankly, is something that is almost seen as patriotic and is not going to be cast aside easily.
Sure, but there is a disconnect here between the political positioning and the rhetoric and the increasing realities of these new global frameworks that we've been discussing. States have always been in the business of amassing power, and the military is, of course, a piece of that state function. What's increasingly important is that in the context of global formations around weapons of mass destruction, around nuclear weapons, increasing legitimacy, transparency, better science, better policy, better monitoring mechanisms is what will be required, regardless of the rhetoric. The U.S. moving forward will need to increasingly coordinate its interest with the interest of the international bodies in order to be successful in deciding and in identifying what are the battles that are worth fighting and what are the battles that will get us nowhere.
All right, let's turn our attention to something that is interesting, not only by virtue of the issue we'll be dealing with, but where it comes from. We're going to have Governor Bill Richardson on, and we're talking about the state of emergency he's declared in his state and neighboring states when talking about the porous borders and the concern of illegal immigration here in the United States. But this comes out of Virginia, not out of Florida, not out of Texas, not out of Arizona, but Virginia, where there's a fight when in a neighboring county and in Herndon, Virginia specifically, who wants to build a site for day laborers to gather. Because right now they gather on the side of the highways waiting for construction work from day to day. Now there is a question of whether or not tax dollars should be used to build this facility where these day laborers would gather. And two of Loudoun County's towns, our counties, are in fact fighting. One wants it, one doesn't. And the idea that we thought was interesting here is the mixed message that's being sent, quite frankly, across across the country, where we're fighting illegal immigration, yet we're providing valid driver's licenses. We're building, for instance, this facility with tax dollars and the like. Marcelo, when we look at this, is there a need? Because, quite frankly, these laborers are so much a part of the economy to make it easy, and in many people's minds, it's a good way of tracking these people.
What's interesting, Ed, is that this is taking place in the South. The South is undergoing a profound demographic transformation as a function of this huge wave of immigration. For the first time in the history of our country, we now have more illegal immigrants coming into the U.S. every year than legal immigrants. This is touching every state of the Union, rural, urban, suburban areas. What we see here in Virginia is another indication of the great dystopia that has come to characterize this wave of illegal, undocumented immigration. We are making a mess at the border. We're making a mess in terms of managing what should be orchestrated nationally at the level of the federal government to bring order into what is clearly an out-of-control and chaotic situation.
Glenn and Yvonne, I'm going to have to hold it there. I apologize for not letting you chime in on that, but we were going so far with the first couple of topics that we've run out of time for today. But as I said, we'll have Governor Bill Richardson on with us tomorrow, and we'll certainly talk about this as it affects his state. But I thank you all, Marcelo, Glenn, and Yvonne, for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. You're welcome.